Great having him on the program, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. David Birdsell, the fine provost at Kane University. Give us a couple of minutes here on this Monday morning. David, a very good morning to you, sir.
Thanks to you. Great to be here today.
It is fantastic to have you here on Eclipse Monday. Are you in New York? Or are you going to be viewing this thing later?
I am definitely going to be doing this thing later, and I am in the tri-state. So I'm not going to get the full eclipse like the rest of us. We'd have to travel over to Buffalo, I think, would be our closest shot at the total effect. But I am looking forward to it, and I've got my NASA-approved solar eclipse glasses, and I'm going to be looking at it at peak at 325.
There you go. I wanted to make sure you had those glasses in tow. Excellent job. You know, I guess the recent poll, now that the – you know, the bulk of the primaries and everything else, New York last week. But I guess that, you know, you could kind of get a sense here of what's going on. If you, and again, polls, you know, really are just snapshots in time. We know that. But when you hear that Trump's leading in six of the seven swing states, I think they're tied in Wisconsin. That's an eye opener. And I get a sense Joe Biden is on the move. He's on the move in Wisconsin. He's on the move in Chicago this week as far as more fundraising is concerned. He was at Radio City with two former presidents last week, David. Trump usurped him over the last couple of days with an unbelievable amount of money that usurped that amount of $26 million, I believe it was, at Radio City. So the fight is on. And buckle up, I guess, huh?
Absolutely. Well, it's very clear that we are into the thick of the general election, even though we're months away from the party conventions in the summer. We know who the two nominees are going to be, and they are at it. The Biden campaign is really beginning to kick into high gear. They have not done a great deal of campaigning. Of course, they did not have primary opponents to contest in the early primary portion of the season, much less the late portion of the season. But now they can go hammer and tong at the presumptive Republican nominee. That's what they're doing. They're going to be talking a lot about the state of the economy, and they are going to be raising money, which, as you pointed out, they've been doing prodigiously. Whether the Republican money-making machine can recover with more than this last week's results is a real question, because unusually for the GOP, they've been sort of on the back heel with regard to fundraising. And how that turns out, particularly now that the Trump family is in charge of the Republican National Committee, is anyone's question with regard particularly to large donors.
Yeah, no question. And I guess, you know, listen, it was interesting to talk about in the beginning stages where many thought, including yours truly here, that you could have a last-second relief from the bullpen come in at the 11th hour at a convention in Chicago come August to relieve Joe Biden of his duties. You know, I don't think it'll happen. I think, realistically speaking, he is on the move. He's campaigning. He's fundraising. And I think the party is all in on Joe Biden at this point.
I think that's absolutely right. And if we were to turn it around and ask the question from the other direction, how could a candidate at this stage in the race mount a credible campaign, create the organization that would get that candidate the kind of fundraising reach and the visibility that that person would need to be successful in November? It's a very, very hard thing to imagine. And the closest thing we come in terms of timing would be Lyndon Johnson back in the 68 campaign, withdrawing it right about this time of the year, but really hobbling Hubert Humphrey, at that time, obviously, his vice president. He never was able to make up the gap and create the campaign machinery that he would have needed to beat Richard Nixon that year, if indeed it was possible at all.
No doubt. David Birdsell with us. You know, I'm hearing the Doug Burgum name, David, a little more as far as a possible selection of a running mate for Donald Trump. I don't know if you're hearing the same, but I've heard the Burgum name. He's been with him on some of these campaign tours and whatnot here. Burgum's with him every step of the way, as is Tim Scott. I got to keep an eye on a guy like Doug Burgum here.
Certainly a possibility. It's an open seat at this stage. It would surprise me if Donald Trump does not pick a woman or an ethnic, a racial minority, and Tim Scott would fill that bill. He needs to think about ways, although I should add before I say this, that there's no proof that vice presidents really do a lot to lift the top of the ticket, no matter who they are, no matter what campaign they're running in. But he's got to be thinking about ways that he can pull votes from Joe Biden. There's some clear indication that he is polling better than any Republican in this century has among minority populations, and particularly among Black men. So the idea of trying to take what has been a rock-solid Democratic constituency, and still an overwhelming majority Democratic constituency, but by a narrower margin. And a Tim Scott could upend that calculus, at least in theory. So I would be surprised to see him running with a white man, but that could happen.
Interesting. You know, before you came on, I was having a conversation with New York State Senator Anthony Palumbo regarding a budget up in Albany. Far apart they are. And it seems to me that Washington is far apart on a number of key issues, and that would include funding. You know, besides putting in these little stopgaps to keep the government flowing, there is some concern regarding Ukraine. And especially if you listen to President Zelensky over there, they're in dire need. And also, you know, funding for Israel and everything else. You wonder, as far apart as they are, if common sense might prevail here, knowing that they're going to have to fortify Ukraine or else. I mean, it is coming down as, you know, obviously Zelensky has been crying out left and right. For something to occur here, the bickering and everything else, you listen to people like Marjorie Taylor Greene going after the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, regarding this issue here. You wonder how this one turns out, David.
Well, you're absolutely right, Jay. There is a big difference between or distance between what Democrats, the Democratic majority in the Senate, is putting forward for possible consideration in the House and where the House majority is at this point. But I think it's important to make the point that the big difference is not between the House majority overall and that Senate majority. The biggest difference is between the 20 or so committed MAGA Republicans who refuse to fund Ukraine, see any budget deal that doesn't scale back the size of the budget dramatically, et cetera. If you were to put a bill on the floor of the House today to fund Ukraine, it would pass with an overwhelming majority of both Republican and Democratic votes. Those 20 or so would sit it out. And the way that the party is structured and the rules change that Kevin McCarthy agreed to en route to becoming Speaker after 15 votes last year. Those rules really hamper the Speaker because any single member can file a motion to vacate. And that is exactly the threat, as you point out, that Marjorie Taylor Greene has made now with regard to Speaker Johnson. It's a very difficult, if not impossible, caucus to manage with that group. And if you were instead to cater to the majority of the Republican conference, a lot of these things would pass pretty easily.
Yeah. And listen, they got other major issues to contend with. You know, you got an impeachment battle against Mayorkas. You got the recovery efforts of the bridge out in Baltimore. I mean, there's a lot to concentrate on right now. And quite frankly, as I see it in Albany, it's the same in Washington. There is so much division that you wonder, it'd be almost miraculous to come together on some sort of a package here.
Absolutely. And Speaker Johnson has indicated that he's trying to square that circle by bringing forward a bill that would undo portions of the Biden climate change agenda. And by the way, also create a liquefied natural gas facility in his home district. Congress does some things predictably and predictably well. And that may, in fact, be the form in which Ukrainian aid comes to the fore. But I'm really glad that you mentioned the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse in Baltimore. This is a classic example of something that should have no partisan politics whatsoever. A catastrophe, clearly, a catastrophe that affected the six construction workers, resulting in their deaths and their families. But beyond that, this is a linchpin of the economic well-being of the United States as a whole and of the East Coast corridor in particular. And to have somebody like Representative Bob Good from Virginia, an adjacent state, voting against any promise of federal aid absent the resolution of the insurance claims, which will take years, if not decades, Jay. This is going to be lawyered up to beat the band. If we're going to wait for that to fix the Port of Baltimore, we're going to be waiting until not just the next presidential administration expiring, but two or three presidential administrations down the road. And this is a clear indication of the scale of the dysfunction in the Congress at this point, that we cannot even agree that we need to rebuild, clear away first the debris, and then rebuild a piece of critical infrastructure like that bridge.
I agree with you 1,000%. Shouldn't even be a point of contention. David Birdsall with us a couple of minutes. I'll tell you, something that's really not getting a lot of play I'm keeping an eye on is the president will host the Japanese prime minister later on in the week, David, which will, I think there's a joint news conference, state dinner, the whole thing. Fifth time Joe Biden has hosted as president, intended to really emphasize the importance of the alliance. And I underline that word alliance, which is so needed right now between the U.S. and Japan, and especially when you are looking to seek a little bit of counterbalance over the influence of China these days. That is something that cannot be accentuated enough, I think.
Well, that's absolutely right. Japan is a critical ally in the region. It's China, it's North Korea, it is the regional security pact, the ability to not only have an ally there, but conceivably to position U.S. munitions there at some point down the road. Our relationship with the Philippines has been shored up. We have not been able to move forward as aggressively as we would have had the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, under the Obama administration. Had that moved forward, we would have had a much more robust economic alliance. What's happened in the meantime is basically that treaty has been ratified, but without the U.S. as a signatory, so we lose a lot of leverage in that way. So being able to build bilateral relationships with Japan, with the Philippines, with other countries in the region, notably Australia, and then but a tick to the west in India, this becomes absolutely critical to try to counterbalance the really naked military plays on the part of the People's Republic of China, particularly with regard to the South China Sea.
And you bring up another good point there with the Filipino president to be present at these meetings this week, and just vital, in my estimation, in order to offset the influence of China and what we have seen over the years, without question. Very important stuff. David Birdsall, ladies and gentlemen, fine, provost of Kane University, who will be watching today's solar eclipse with the right glasses, I might add, and doing it safely. David, we'll keep an eye on it. No pun intended, sir. And I look forward to talking with you next time.
Looking forward to it as well, Jay.